This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer for the program. Kyle Mabry is at the controls this morning. On the show here, as a regular feature, we do a program every month, and it's always on a Friday. That's all about money management. And it is a chance for you to call in and ask questions about financial planning. The fellow here who is right next to me, David Sinnoh, has been doing this program with us for a very long time, showing up here on a regular basis. And then the other two guys here, John Masetich and Kevin Wasby, have also been guests on the program. John is from California, and he occasionally visits here and spends time on the campus teaching. And Kevin is adjunct lecturer of finance here at the U of I, and he's been here at the university for quite a while. And between the three of them, they've given us many hours of service as part of this program. And we're going to do another hour here. So I have some emails we're going to do. If people want to call in with questions, that's great. Now, there's something. These guys, they got deep pockets. They're rich guys, believe me. And so what they have said, Kevin started this, and he dragged these other two guys, these poor guys, into it. They said, okay, for folks who will call in and make a contribution this morning, each of them will reach into their deep pocket and pull out a crisp $10 bill to add on to your pledge. So that means that if you, for example, would call and make a pledge of $50, to us, that means $80. I can do that math. So that's the deal. As a way of encouraging folks to call in and make a pledge, that's the thing. So your pledge will go that much further.
I did even easier math. I said it was a pledge of $100, and it'd be, in my mind, it was a $100 pledge with another $30 tacked on for a net gain of $130.
See, you really should be in the development game because you're just, I'm going $50. No, she's going $100. Okay, that's the thing. No matter what it is, if you could, that would be lovely. If you could make a $100 pledge, that's $130 for us. That's the idea.
Exactly. And you know, and we'll take any amount. So so we're happy with any contribution of support. But I just like the idea of, you know, adding the 3 to the 10.
Mm-hmm.
That was my thought. And we can't thank these gentlemen enough. Not only are they here contributing their time and their experience and their intelligence to the program, but they're also, as David said, reaching in their pocket. They're showing, you know, us and the audience that they really feel this is a sound investment. And frankly, if they think it's a sound investment, shouldn't you? That's my question. So get to that phone, 244-9455, or go online and back these guys up. You know, show them that you value what they're doing on the air and that you believe that they know what they're doing and that you support it. So again, make that call of support at 244-9455.
Very good. Thank you very much. We'll talk some more at you in a little bit, but we have a caller here ready to go, and we would certainly welcome others. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. You'll come right here to the show. No one's going to grab you and shake you down on the way. It's just to ask questions. We hope people will contribute. That's not required to ask a question on the show. We have a caller in Urbana, and let's talk with them. Line number one. Hello. Yes.
I just want to make a quick comment on the guest from California, contrasted his situation to those of us who are dependent on the SERS system, and he said he doesn't have a defined benefit plan. Actually, he does. It's the federal Social Security, and those of us on SERS are limited to SERS. So our position is very vulnerable because the state hasn't been making its contribution as he's been making his to Social Security. So he does, in fact, have a defined benefit plan that he can base at least part of his pension on, and that's the federal Social Security system. That's all I wanted to say.
All right.
And we appreciate that comment because that is problematic for most people in the SERS system because they never actually placed money into the Social Security system. We are responsible for Medicare. However, a number of people may have consulted privately, and if they have 40 calendar quarters of credit, they would still receive some Social Security. However, that is problematic in itself because there is something called the Social Security offset. And Social Security, basically your payment is based upon three separate tiers. The majority of that payment may indeed come for a lot of folks in that first tier of payment. And essentially, there is a reduction in your Social Security benefit based upon the number of years you've paid into Social Security. If you have a defined benefit plan, for example, at the University of Illinois, and you privately consulted, for example, and you had consulted for 29 years and had paid into the Social Security system for at least 29 years, then there would be no offset if you were fortunate enough to have Social Security. Mm-hmm. It's very complicated. The bottom line is you probably should discuss that with your financial advisor if you happen to be in both systems. But again, for most of us at the University of Illinois, most of the teachers, they really did not participate in the Social Security system.
Yeah, I'd like to comment, too. The caller makes a valid point about my getting Social Security. Also, I'll point out something else, that my normal retirement age for Social Security is 66, which comes this coming January, and I plan to take it. But that's not necessarily the best policy. There are some people who have ample resources they can live on. And if you delay your Social Security payment until 70, for each year you delay it, you get an extra 8% on your payment. That's a guaranteed return of 8%. I mean, that's hard to beat right now. So if you go from 60, if you take it at 70, you'll get an extra 32%. It's 8% per year, but it's not compounded. So an extra 32%.
And interestingly enough, there have been lots of actuarial studies done that show that by waiting those 4 years, you're really not sacrificing based upon your actuarial likelihood of living. And if you are married to a younger spouse, often that is a very sensible approach, and that is to wait to 70. That's 8% simple interest. It's not compounded, but nevertheless, that's a handsome rate of return in today's world where we're fighting for a 0.5% in a money market account. So, John, points well taken.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, other questions welcome. I have some that have come in by email that I will ask, and people who are listening, if you'd like to call in, 333-9455. Those are the numbers. Well, let me start in here with some of the questions that I have received by email. And let me start here with this. We have someone who writes in, and here we go. We're looking to take our tax return and visit an independent financial planner who could be objective and not try to sell a particular product or line of services as a bank might. They say we don't have anything very complicated, some 429 accounts, a Roth IRA, some elective plans at our workplaces. We've heard Scottrade or TIAA CREF have good products, but we don't know how to get started. And I think it might be worth the money to pay someone to help us on our way. So they want to know what kind of questions should we ask when making the initial calls and what might be a reasonable amount we might expect to pay, say, at an hourly rate.
That's a great question. And David, I'm going to turn that over to John. But before I do, John is a certified financial planner. So he has asked this question continuously. And I should also say that John, in addition to donating time at the University of Illinois, has established in the College of ACES a nationally certified program for certified financial planners. And John won't blow his own horn, but I'm very, very proud to say that he basically, with the help of a couple of other of his colleagues in that particular college, has done a wonderful job. So students can take a regimen of courses and prepare themselves to become a certified financial planner. So John, how do we do this? How do we choose a financial planner?
This is really a great question. And I think the caller is going down the right track here. He should be looking for a fee-only financial planner, one that does not take commissions or kickbacks from any other person or financial institution. One who is not selling anything per se. I haven't sold anything in 27 years. I just get a fee for my service. So you definitely want a fee-only financial planner. And then I would ask the planner several questions. One would be, when I say fee-only, there are about three ways of calculating this. One would be on an hourly basis. Unfortunately, there aren't too many financial planners who will do it on an hourly basis. If you can find one that you think is pretty good, that would be a good way to go, because maybe you don't need to hire this person on a retainer basis. You just need to consult maybe a few hours per year. That'd be a good way. Another way of charging would be a flat fee. This is what I do with my clients. I charge them just a fixed fee, and I bill them on a quarterly basis. And that would imply ongoing, continuous advice. That is a good way to go. But then I would also check out the financial planner, and there are a number of easy ways to do this. I would go to the SEC website. I can't remember the exact website now, but just go to the SEC, and you'll find a section on the SEC website where you can see if that planner has been has had any disciplinary action against him or her. That would be obviously a thing to check out. And also probably your state, I get, I guess the caller's from Illinois. I think the state of Illinois probably has a website where you could also check any disciplinary action. So if the planner has a clean bill of health and you're satisfied with the fee approach, that's a good way to go. And I'll just say that the fee-only approach, I believe, I may sound biased on this since I'm a fee-only planner, but I think it is a superior way to go because otherwise you're dealing with someone on a commission basis and there's an obvious conflict of interest when someone's trying to sell you something.
Right. And you also want to look, obviously, at their credentials. Maybe they have what's called a CFP, a certified financial planner. Maybe they're a lawyer. Maybe they're a certified public accountant. And in some rare instances, they may also be a chartered financial analyst, a CFA. And Kevin Waspy heads up that program to have students study to become to earn that certification, which is a very difficult certification to receive, the CFA.
Thank you. I'd also like to remind our listeners that this is Money Smart Week. There are more than 50 events planned throughout Champaign County. The topics and the seminars, if you want to put it that way, they really span the range of personal finance issues, things like identity theft, saving for specific goals like college education, retirement planning, so on and so forth. So bottom line is, at these events, you will meet other people looking for information, interacting with people who have information. And like searching for an attorney or for a physician, asking for referrals from those people that have experience is an excellent way to find a planner.
Okay. We have some other callers here. We'll get to them. Let me ask another email question here. This is a tax question. It's a little complicated. I don't know if one of you will be able to answer it, but here we go. We have someone who writes, I was awarded stock options while working as a resident of Illinois for an Illinois-based company. He says he's now retired. He will need to exercise these stock options in the next couple of years. They're held by a major brokerage company. He wants to know if he moves and establishes residency in another state, and apparently he's thinking about moving to Texas where they do not have state income tax, and then he moves to Texas and then exercises these options. While he is a resident of Texas, will there be any tax owed to the state of Illinois?
Well, let me talk a little bit about options in general. That's a very interesting question. I'm going to surmise an answer, but I think you need to check with the CPA. Mm-hmm. The individual we're talking about probably has what are called non-qualified options. Most options today are non-qualified or NQ options. They're often called cashless exercise options because they're held at a brokerage firm. The moment you exercise those options, maybe one option equals one share. So let's take the example of 100 options. You have the right to get 100 shares. And let's say your option price, or your strike price, is $10, and the market value is $20. So that means you're in the money. In other words, if you exercise that, well, you've got a $10 profit. Typically, in a non-qualified cashless exercise, you don't even come up with money. You don't have to put the $10 on the table. It's an automatic buy and sell. And then the gain is taxed federally at ordinary income tax rates. So whatever marginal tax bracket you find yourself in, just add that gain on and you will be taxed at that rate. Now, typically, options are considered personal property. Stock is considered personal property, unlike real property. And generally, personal property for state income tax purposes is taxed where you are a domicile, where you are a resident. Now, you all might have different information, but just following my logic, I believe that if you did move and then you exercise the options, because you're exercising personal property, not real property, you're generating a gain from personal property, it would be taxed where you are domiciled in the state where you are truly a resident, which means you've got a driver's license in that state, you vote in that state, you have a residence in that state, and you spend more than 6 months in a day in that state. Then you would be taxed according to that state. And I don't believe it matters whether you have IBM options, AT&T options from any other type of company. I don't know, fellas, do you follow that logic, or am I correct in that?
You're correct in a generality, but it really depends on the classification of the employee stock option that was granted. Believe it or not, there are three different classifications, and one of them might not be subject to tax at all. One of them might be subject to capital gains tax on the difference in value, as you described. And believe it or not, a third type might actually be taxable at a normal or regular income tax rate. But I think the question was, as it relates to which state income tax might attach it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there, we are not talking about the state of Illinois taxing the gain if they're a resident of Texas. So I think the question boils down for this person, regardless of what happens at the federal tax level, if they're in Texas when they exercise, Texas law will prevail.
Okay. It should. All right. It should. All right. And there are options called ISOs. That's really what Kevin was referring to, incentive stock options. They operate a little bit differently. That's where you actually take the money, exercise your options, buy the shares. Then if you hold those shares for at least a year and then sell those shares at a gain, you have what's called a capital gain. And we know that capital gains tax rates, at least today, are less than ordinary income tax rates. So we have something called ISOs. But for the most part, most of these options probably are NQs. So we'll
all
see.
Right. Well, for sure, though, he should get, to, if he has an accountant or he knows one.
Absolutely.
You get to consult with a CPA to get your final ruling. Okay. Let's go to a call here. Line one, Champagne. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to clarify something about, and I'm actually very far from retirement age myself, about this delay in Social Security. You mean you would forgo 5 years of payments to get the payments that are 8% higher?
Yes, yes. And there have been all kinds of studies done that show that basically you end up with about the same amount of money based upon your life expectancy, and if you are married to a younger spouse, it's really in your interest to do this.
Right, because the spouse can continue receiving the benefits. But according to my very, very simple calculation is, and I can do it two ways right here, is that the spouse's expectancy needs to be about 50 years or a little bit more in order for that to make any sense. So, yes, if you have a 40-year-old spouse, I suppose that would make sense. I mean, there are two ways to do the math. One is X is the number of years you expect to live, and then you do X is the number of payments that you'll receive equals X minus 5, which is if you wait 5 years, but the payments are 8% bigger, so X minus 5 times 1.08. And you just solve for X when it makes sense, and it's way over 50 years. Well, not way over, but a little bit. Another very simple way to think about it is that you just take the 5 years of payments, okay, and you put them straight in the bank. Okay, and then you have 5 years of payments accumulated, and you only need the rate of return of less than 2% to equal the 8% increase on the payments. Plus, you gain on the principal of those 5 years. So you just take the 5 years, okay, you put them in the bank, and if you can get 2%, okay, on a CD or anything like that, a 2% rate of return per annum, okay, then you're beating already the delay of 5 years. Okay, so it's nothing at all, like an 8% rate of return.
I wonder if I could jump in here and just ask a quick question. I think I might have misunderstood you. I believe John Masetich gave the example of a person deferring payments for 4 years from the age of 66 to the age of 70.
Right.
And I believe that he was saying that the amount of payment would be 8% per year higher. So in essence, if I took a payment of $1,000 at age 66, the payment, if I deferred to age 70, would be 32% higher, or a payment of $1,320.
Oh, per year. Okay.
Per year.
32%.
Yes.
Higher. Okay.
And that's
it's like an 8% rate of return.
Bingo. And that's what David Sinnoh was on in terms of a comparative rate of return per annum.
Right. Not 8% higher. 8%
isn't this stuff goofy?
That makes sense.
No, I'm glad you guys are following this.
Isn't this stuff goofy?
That makes a lot of sense. That would cut that cutoff point from 50 years by a quarter of it. And I'm sorry, I wasn't paying full attention.
I think
so,
my spouse
like
could
12
be
a, years, 13 years.
I think my spouse could be about 3 years younger and love it.
I'm glad we got that settled because I'm glad you guys followed that because I was completely lost. I have some other callers here. We'll take our guests here this morning are Kevin Wasby, David Sino, John Masetich. Every month here on the program, on a Friday, we do this money management show. Dave has been doing it with us for a very long time. Kevin has also been a regular guest. John has been here a number of times. And we're really happy they could all be here to share their expertise. And if you have questions on money management, please do give us a call. We hope that you will do something else as well, and that if you're not a financial supporter of the station, you will do that too. There are some folks who have been very generous and very loyal and have supported us for... Well, we've been doing fundraising here for longer than I've been here. So it's been more than 30 years. And I bet that there are people who have been supporters of the station for 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, maybe. And we can't thank those folks enough. But we also have to continue to grow the base of support to encourage new folks to come in. And that's why we do this.
And David, I have exciting news to deliver. One is that we've had four callers so far we want to thank this morning. We want to thank Marlene of Urbana, Mary of Cisna Park, Don of Gibson City, and Sally and Norman of Champaign. So obviously people are listening and they do value the kind of programming they're hearing from our guests this morning, who have been extremely generous themselves. You may have heard earlier that they are pledging. They've made a challenge. They're going to contribute $10 from each of their pockets. So if you add that up, it's 30 additional dollars for each pledge during the rest of this program. So if you have not made a contribution, here's an opportunity to get more value out of your investment. So think about it. If you make a pledge of $100, you can add an extra $30 to your pledge just by making it in the next hour. But we do need to hear from you at 244-9455 or go online. Very simple thing to do and make that pledge at willpledge.org. We want to thank David and John and Kevin, not just for contributing their time, but actually, you know, increasing that value themselves and saying, this is worthwhile, people. You know, we want to encourage you to support this program as well.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, seeing all these numbers flying around, I'm just starting to think that if when I was in school, I was actually paying attention, I wouldn't be a public radio talk show host. No, I'd be a rich financial planning guy like these guys. It's too late for me. Maybe not too late for the people who are listening. So tell your kids to study math. And if you have questions, you can call us.
We're still very grateful that you have chosen the career you've chosen,
thank you
though,
very
David.
Much. Thank you. Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate that thought, and I appreciate the calls of people who have been calling in. And we have some others, and we'll take as many as we possibly can as we continue to talk with John and Dave and Kevin. Shall we just go back to it? Right. Let's do that. To Charleston, line number 3. Hello.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad I have the opportunity to ask this question. It's definitely money management. My husband and I got rid of our payments on our house. We were finalized that in 1999.
Congrats.
And then in 2010, I retired, and 6 months later, we bought a vacation home. I know that doesn't make sense.
Are you inviting me to your vacation home?
Well, it's in California. It's in a wonderful area. So, and at this point, we owe $115,000 on it. We love being debt-free, and so we have this $115,000 now. My plan is that when I turn 59 and a half, which is 2.5 years from now, that I would take money out of TIA CREF for whatever we owed and just do a lump sum paying off the house. Now, the flip side is I was listening to the information about bonds. We have 4 bonds right now that are, when they're due, they'll be worth $40,000, but they're due somewhere between 2020 and 2039. So I was wondering if maybe I should turn those in soon to try to take down how much we owe. And I have other financial information. We have over $500,000 in TIA CREF.
Okay.
And then we also have stocks and bonds, and we both are in the CSRS. I'm in CSRS right now, and my husband will be, so we'll have a fixed income that I think is perfectly acceptable.
Good, good.
So.
Well, let me tackle the very first part of that with the suggestion that in 2.5 years at age 59 and a half, you would jump into TIA CREF and simply grab maybe $110,000 to $115,000 and pay off your debt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, recall that probably all of the money that you've contributed to TIA CREF is on a tax-deferred basis. And when you take it out, it's going to be subject to ordinary income.
Okay.
So the truth of the matter is that if you really wanted to do that, and I would caution you, in fact, I would suggest that is not a good idea,
okay,
you'd really have to pull out about $175,000, pay the tax on $175,000. I'm just assuming a 30 to 35% tax bracket on that money in addition to everything else you have, and that would leave you a net of $115,000. So that is really not a particularly great idea to do
huge.
That. All right?
Mm-hmm.
The next thing that I was going to suggest, and actually Kevin Waspy and John were just handing me notes, and I'll let them jump in because we're all preaching to the choir, is we want to know about your interest rate on a second home, which right now are very, very low. So tell us your interest rate that you've negotiated on your second home. Tell us also where it is, and tell me if it has good fishing.
Okay. Well, it's 4%. And it is a home equity loan that we actually have on our house here in Charleston. It's in Sonoma, California. So fishing, yeah, maybe, but wine, absolutely.
Sonoma County is wonderful, and those wineries, I'm already thinking about them from the days that I used to live a few months of the year out in Sausalito, California, in Marin County.
Another great area.
I'm not very excited about your 4% home equity loan for a lot of reasons. One, it can go up. And two, you're not taking advantage of some wonderful interest rates. Kevin, you want to jump in?
I'm usually the last person that likes to recommend a person borrowing money. But in the circumstance that we have at hand here, I'm seeing 30-year fixed-rate mortgages basically at 3.78%, 3.88%.
Okay.
And that house in California would qualify as a second residence. You'd put a 30-year fixed-rate loan on it, pay off the HELOC on your house in Charleston, get out of the risk of it, be debt-free, essentially, and literally have the option with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage of paying it off anytime sooner than you wish.
Mm-hmm.
And if 5 years from now interest rates are significantly higher, be thankful that you've borrowed money and have the use of it for other purposes at a cost to you of 3.88%.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Well, it does. Now, we've been told it's a fixed rate of 4%.
That's okay. If it's still a HELOC, I don't want to look at it.
Okay.
It can eventually change, and I just did the numbers. If you borrowed the $115,000 at Kevin's rate of about 3.88%, that's a monthly payment of $335.
Wow.
Which is a lot easier to handle when you're pulling money out of TIAA CREF. And essentially, you're pulling not even interest and dividend money out, a very, very small amount of money, out of TIAA CREF to essentially pay that mortgage payment. Remember that if you are going to itemize, perhaps you will, perhaps you won't, that interest is going to be deductible. Real estate taxes on both your first and your second home will be deductible as an itemized expense. So I'm guessing you will still be itemizing, so your effective interest rate is probably going to be lower than 3.88. It may be in the 2.5 range, which is pretty darn cheap money, probably looking forward 5 to 10 years from now. John, do you have any other?
Oh, I would agree. If you have an after-tax cost of maybe 2.5%, that's really good.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with David on that. And congratulations on Sonoma County. Wonderful place.
Thank you.
All right.
All right. Food for thought, then. Thank you very much.
Very good. Hope that helps. We have some other callers here. And we'll go to Urbana for somebody else here. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi. Well, I've been listening with much interest, and I want to approach from a different standpoint of assets, loss of assets. And that is that we are, I understand, going to have the loss of assets soon of David Inge on our Focus program. And now I'm beginning to wonder if perhaps he's thinking of moving to San Diego. And I'm from San Diego, so I'm getting really suspicious, and I think we're losing a great interest here, maybe.
Well, it is true that I am going to retire at the end of June, but I like Champaign-Urbana very much, and my wife and I have a house that's almost paid for, so I don't really think we're planning on going anywhere soon.
Well, I know how that feels. Well, that is good news, and I'm happy. Now my portfolio is very pleased. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, I'm not sure that just my presence adds any value to the Urbana-Champaign area, but if somebody thinks so, that's nice.
We think so, David.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. Let's just go on here. I'm so embarrassed. Let's go to line number two. This is Urbana as well. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
If what I read is correct, the real growth in the world is not going to occur in the United States, but is going to occur outside the United States in Asia and less developed countries. Therefore, for the equity portion of your portfolio, how much would you put in U.S. versus foreign stocks?
Well, that's an interesting question because so many of the U.S. companies are global, and it's very difficult now to determine, without looking at the annual statements, exactly what percentage of the earnings are coming from the U.S. side and what percentage of the earnings are coming from all over the world. I happened to be visiting with some folks from Manpower, which is a Fortune 100 company, and I was amazed to learn not only the billions of dollars of revenue that the company earns, but most of it is earned abroad. Only about 25% of it is earned in the United States. So you raise a very interesting question, and that is what percentage, if you subscribe to the model that most of the economic growth here going forward is going to be in the undeveloped world or the rapidly developing world as opposed to the U.S., I'm still a core believer in U.S. stocks because I think that they are forced, for one thing, to do business not only in the United States, but to do business all over the world. So, and I may be just a bit ethnocentric, but I would still feel that the majority of my stock positions would still be in the United States. Kevin, John, I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that, too. But and as I said before in the earlier part of the program, I'd be rather leery of European stocks right now. But in terms of the emerging markets, I still think it's a good story, despite their slowdown. So I think of your total stock portfolio, from what I've read, the people that I respect are saying maybe somewhere between 10 and 30% of your stock portfolio you could justify in the international markets with a heavy weight toward emerging if you're willing to take that risk in emerging markets because they really are riskier. I mean, they are literally there's one statistic that we all use, the standard deviation of returns, and the American market has a standard deviation of about 15%. Emerging markets are at least 30, maybe as much as 40%. Mm-hmm. So, you know, literally twice as much risk, maybe even three times as much risk when you're talking about India, China, Brazil, Turkey, and so forth.
So what that really means is if you were expecting a 5 to 10% return in the U.S., then one standard deviation would mean that you might be up 15% from there or down 15% from there. But in the emerging markets, if you're expecting 5 to 10%, it might be up 30, down 30, highly volatile.
That's right. For example, if you look at the Vanguard Emerging Fund, a very fine fund, there's an open-ended one and there's also an ETF you can look at. Go back about 10 years and just look at the rate of return year by year and you'll be amazed. Go to yahoofinance.com or morningstar.com. Look at it year by year and you will see years where the fund went up 40, 50, 60%. And other years where it went down 40, 50, 60%. Mm-hmm. So that's the risk that you have to consider.
Okay.
Well, I hope that gets at your question. We need to take a very short break here. Then we'll talk some more with our guests, John Macedich, David Sino, and Kevin Wasby. This is Focus.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Owens Funeral Home, located at the corner of Elm and University in the historic Trevett Mansion, across from Westside Park in downtown Champaign. Owens Funeral Home, owned and operated by the Owens family since 1925, invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
This is Focus. It is our morning talk show. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics every week. We try to mix it up, have some things that are entertaining, instructional, useful, and this program on money management is one of the things that we've built into the schedule. We do it every month. It's always on a Friday. Dave Sinnoh has been here for many years doing this show, and we had a guest, Marilyn Nichols, who did it for many years before that. So this is one of the things that's one of the longest-running features of Focus, doing this show. And we're happy to have it here. We hope it is useful. I know that a lot of people have called in and asked questions over the time that we've been doing this. So if you find this show useful and other shows useful, we hope that you will understand listener support is vital. 40%, I think it's actually more than 40% of the budget comes from listeners. It's the only really reliable, growable source that we've really got.
Exactly.
And so occasionally we come in front of the microphones and we try to remind people of that. So what we hope you can do, if you're not already a supporter of the station, you can call us, you can go online, one way or the other, you can make a contribution and help keep the station strong. And Molly Delaney is my partner here this morning, pitch partner.
I am. And, you know, as I'm listening this morning, David, this is just a really good example, I think, of the kind of in-depth information you can get on Focus. So here we are. We have three experts in the field who are making themselves available to our listeners at no cost. And people are calling in with really detailed questions that, you know, if they went to their financial planner, that they would be paying for this advice. So, you know, we're providing the service to the community, and it's very valuable. It's not like, oh, it's a, you know, kind of flash in the pan kind of thing. We've been doing this a long time, providing really valuable information for people in their actual, you know, financial planning, workday life, everything. So if that's what you value and you want to let us know, we would really appreciate your support. We need to hear from you at 244-9455. And I think we need to mention again that these guys have made a challenge to our listeners this morning. They've given up 2 hours of their time. They're also each giving up $10 out of their own pocket to make a total of $30 for every pledge that we receive. So we want to hear from you. We need to hear from you now during this next, you know, 15, 20 minutes of the program. So make that pledge of support at 244-9455. And thank you to David and Kevin and John for giving their time and, you know, making an investment.
Yeah, we appreciate it very much. All right. Well, we do have about 10 minutes or so left in this part of the show with Dave Sinnoh, Kevin Waspe, John Masetich. We have another caller here ready to go. We'll do as many questions as we can. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I had a question about some immediate assets. I have a pension, and we have a pretty substantial portfolio in our retirement thing. But we have some CDs that are paying like 5.5% that are maturing, and we try to hold some liquid assets in a money market, which is paying next to nothing. So we have a mortgage balance of about $95,000 on our primary residence, and that would cut down. We have a $50,000 CD coming up and about $80,000 in money market. And the mortgage is at 3.75%. And I'm looking at just when the CD comes due, paying that off. That's 3.75 that I'm looking at, although it's going to reduce funds in our, you know, immediate equity. And I want to know, I can't think of a reason not to do that. So I'd appreciate thoughts on that.
John, you want to jump in? Or?
Sure. I would pay it off. Look at it this way. If you pay off a 3.75% loan, it's like making a 3.75% investment. And I realize you might get some tax savings on that, but still, even after taxes, it's costing you 2 point something. It's actually hard to go out and get 2 point something right now without really
That's
stretching
the math
for you.
I did, and I thought, boy, this is so simple, and yet I, you know, constantly hear people say not to pay off you know, that investment, but that's it. So thanks very much.
Sure. We're in a different world today with the rock-bottom interest rates, and, you know, 3.75% is actually relatively high compared to the environment that we're in.
Okay, Thank you. Well, good. I don't know if there's anything Kevin wanted to add, or it sounds like you, the three,
no, we
you
agree.
Pretty much in
agreement. We agree.
All
absolutely.
Right. Very good.
Absolutely.
You know, one thing that I would like to remind people that part of the reason for doing this is just to get people to think about being smart with their money, and that there is this event, it's been going on now for a number of years, that's called Money Smart Week, and there are a lot of things going on in our part of the state, and if you go to the website of the Federal Reserve in Chicago, you can go to the events section, then you can choose your county, say you're in Champaign County, and you can find out what's going on, and there are a lot of free informational, educational resources available, a lot of programs going on to try to educate people, help you educate yourself about being smart with your money. And there was something in particular, I think, that Kevin wanted to talk about.
Great. Thanks, David. I've been kind of sitting on this, but now that the announcement has been made publicly, I need to point out that one of the kind of interesting and fun things that Professor Elizabeth Oltaten does throughout the local high schools in conjunction with Money Smart Week is to promote a contest where students in high schools put together videos, little vignettes that are educational about smart money themes. So the winners this year, and this is kind of nice because the students get to showcase their creativity, they get to showcase their talent, they get to put together some educational vignettes that other students can look at and really get some decent tips from and have fun doing it. Heartland Bank this year actually sponsored monetary awards, prizes that the students could win. So this year we've got three winners. The first place goes to a video titled Spence Goes to Jail. I'll bet, I've looked at all of these and it's pretty hilarious, but as you might guess, it has to do with educating people about the bad things that can happen as it relates to identity theft. That was put together by three students in Champaign Central High School that were supervised by Dave Johnson, a teacher there that works pretty strongly with Elizabeth in the financial literacy program. The second place was Credit Fraud. Title is pretty obvious. Again, the two students that came from Muhammad Seymour High School. So in that sense, another vignette to look at. And then again, another one from students out of Champaign Central, again, supervised by Dave Johnson, with their anti-fraud titled video. So three student video submissions, three winners, monetary awards, generously donated by Heartland Bank. The students had fun doing it. You can go to the business school's financial literacy website and actually see the videos, as well as videos that have been submitted over the past 5 years that we've been engaging in this. Okay. So, again, we're trying to stimulate education about being smart about money, and this is a fun way for high school students to get involved.
Okay, so that's the University of Illinois College of Business. You go to their website, and you can see this.
Click on the financial literacy link. You can go right to the video essay contests.
Okay, great.
And certainly those were lovely videos, well done, and congratulations to all of those students involved. Notice that the topics were identity theft, credit fraud theft, fraud, etc. And there is a gigantic story, ladies and gentlemen, in the Wall Street Journal of just yesterday and earlier this week. It involves actually my hometown where I grew up, of Dixon, Illinois. And you can go to the internet and read all about it. Apparently, a $30 million fraud or theft of city funds occurred in Dixon, Illinois. And it is alleged that the comptroller from Dixon, Illinois, whose name is Rita Crunwell, she's become famous on the internet and all across the country. It is alleged that she apparently, as the comptroller of the city of Dixon, over the last 5 to 6 years, somehow embezzled, stole, defrauded the city of some $30 million. Now, to put that in perspective, the community is only about 16,000 folks. Hasn't changed much since the days I grew up there. It was about 16,000 in those days. And, David, that was a long time ago. The entire city budget is only about $8 million per year, which means that somehow she walked away with somewhere between $5 and $6 million of that $8 million per year. No one can figure it out. Other than she seems to be quite professional and quite well known as one of the leading horse breeders in the United States, she apparently runs around in a $2 million bus, motor coach home, recently had as much as $2 million of credit cards paid off via American Express, and had a few $100,000 of jewelry, land, etc. to boot. Now, we're not casting aspersions or anything like that, but to put this in some dimension for a small community to lose $30 million, this would be on the size of the Madoff fraud. That's the kind of size that we are talking relatively. So it's important to become educated. Obviously, these things can happen. Everyone's heart's out, including mine, to the city of Dixon. It's a tragedy indeed. But it's so important to become educated as an individual. And Money Smart Week is just one more way for all of us to become better educated about handling our own personal funds.
Let me just, this as a way of finishing up, it would take just maybe a couple of minutes here. I'm interested in your reaction to one further email from someone who writes in and wonders whether you have any thoughts on investing locally. The person writes, it doesn't make sense to me to invest my money in multinational companies that are growing their share prices by laying off my neighbors and offshoring their jobs. And one of the things that he points to was, in fact, the recent effort that the folks at the Common Ground Food Co-op did, where they raised money from their customers and people in the community because they wanted to expand the business. And it was very, very successful. And I think other people in the community looked at that and thought, oh, now that's very interesting way to raise money to expand rather than going to a bank. Saying to your customers and people in the community, well, do you want to invest in this business? Would you like to see us grow? Buy a share. I think that's really quite interesting. Any thoughts you have on that subject?
Well, I think it could be part of your diversification strategy. Wherever you're investing, certainly you could invest locally. There are corporations, there are companies, there are nonprofits that you could essentially invest locally, but it is part of your overall diversification strategy. Mm-hmm. So that's important. And the second thing I would remember and remind our audience is that when you invest, regardless of where you invest, liquidity becomes very important. And that is, at any point in time, can you take that investment, if necessary, and reduce it to cash? So I don't have a problem. Indeed, I would suggest, and I'm very pleased to hear that people are investing locally, but it should be an overall part of your diversification or perhaps charitable giving strategy. And if it is truly part of your investment strategy, make certain that it is a liquid investment.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Also, I'd like to make a distinction between getting a return of your investment versus getting a return on your investment. Big difference. Well, when will you get your money back? You know, the whole liquidity aspect to it. But philanthropically, it's a wonderful idea.
Well, we are just about at the point we have to finish, and I don't know if there's any sort of last thought anybody has. I can't really probably give each of you an opportunity to get in the last thought. But Kevin, how about you? give me this look. Some last sort of idea that you might like to leave with folks.
One idea I would like to leave with folks is there is, in a community such as ours, the community is close to Champaign County. Let's just put it this way. Within the listening area of WILL, there are so many opportunities people have if they only explore and take advantage of them. A person should never feel like they're operating in an uninformed way. It's really a true statement.
All right. Well, we hope this program has been helpful. It will continue to be a regular part of the show. I don't know who will be the next guy here, whether it will be Dave next month or it will be Kevin. One of these guys is going to be here next month. You can rely on it as a regular feature of the show. And we want to say thanks very much to David Sinnoh, John Masetich, Kevin Wasby. Hey, guys, thanks very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.